Marcel Sanchez from the health scientist from the Agency for Toxic Substances and Disease Registry. She currently works in the Surveillance and Registries branch, and she will be discussing determining the feasibility of a national lateral sclerosis registry through 4 pilot projects. Dr. Sanchez. Is that the beginning?
Hello, I'm Marcel Sanchez, and I have no relationships to disclose. What we're talking about today is the determining the feasibility of a national amyotrophic lateral sclerosis, otherwise known as Lou Gehrig disease registry, through 4 pilot projects. So, before we started the pilot projects, we went through 4. Before we started the registry, we went through 4 pilot projects, and I'll explain kind of what the results were for the pilot projects. The need for a national ALS registry is that ALS is a progressive fatal neurodegenerative disease caused by the degeneration of motor neurons. Approximately 80% die within 2 to 5 years of diagnosis, so there's a very short survival period. ALS is one of several motor neuron diseases, but it accounts for approximately 80% of the motor neuron diseases. There's lack of a reliable incidence and prevalence estimates in the United States, so that's one of the goals of the registry. The national estimates rely heavily on mortality data, but that's nonspecific. It's because it's looking at ICD-10 codes, which only look at MNDs. It's not ALS specific. The goal of the 4 pilot projects were to assess the feasibility of developing a national ALS registry by looking at already pre-existing data from national data sets to help create the national databases of persons with ALS. The first thing we did was to identify and obtain records from the national databases. And an estimated 90 million individuals are covered from these 4 data sets. We're looking at the Veterans Health Administration, Veterans Benefits Administration, Medicare, and Medicaid. Then we wanted to identify the 4 pilot areas to participate in the projects, catchment areas. We looked at Emory University, which looked at all of the state of Georgia, South Carolina, which is the full state of South Carolina, Mayo Clinic, which is Olmsted County, and the HMO Research Network, HMORN, which was 9 different sites throughout the country. But the methods that we used in order, that the pilot projects used to determine the feasibility was first identify, we sent them what we thought people were in their area, so we had the national databases, and for Georgia, we would look for all the zip codes in Georgia, send them all that information, and then they would look at their records to see if they have those people in their data sets. Then what they would do is review the medical records from the local data sources to determine the correct diagnosis. Does this person really have ALS? Do they possibly have ALS? Or do they definitely not have ALS? Then they sent the information back to us along with the national database information, and we looked at determining which ICD-9 codes and procedure codes most likely signified having an ALS diagnosis. Then we developed an algorithm to identify the true cases of ALS. This just going to go through a couple charts just to show you how many charts were reviewed by the pilot sites, the 4 different pilot sites, and also looking at the number of charts reviewed. So Emory had a total of about 2,400 charts that were reviewed. HMORN, which was the one with like 9 different areas, had almost 18,000 charts that they received from us. Mayo Clinic had approximately 1,500, and South Carolina had around 2,000. This shows for each age range how many charts were reviewed. You can see that versus not chart reviewed. You can see that age 60 to 80 had the most charts reviewed, as well as had the most cases sent to them. The ages 60 to 80 is the typical age range for ALS patients. You can see that mostly white people were chart reviewed. Right now, it seems like we see a lot more cases of white people having ALS, but it does affect other races, and we're trying to get more data on the other races to see how well it does. We had a large number of unknowns just because one of the H. Morin groups didn't actually collect race, so we weren't able to find out what races they were. As you can see from this chart, there's a few more males than females. That's typically, there's not quite a one-to-one ratio of ALS with males to females, although the difference is becoming closer and closer to one-to-one. This is looking at the ALS ICD-9 codes versus the MND ICD-9 codes. There's a rough, it looks more like it's a half, 50% for each of the pilot sites received ICD-9 codes with ALS only or with other MNDs. This is looking at the total charts reviewed for each site. So Emory reviewed about 450 sites, H. Morin reviewed about 2,500 sites, or charts, excuse me. Mayo Clinic reviewed approximately 540, and South Carolina reviewed about 1,200, or 1,100, excuse me. And you can see that ALS cases were a lot more, there was a lot more of the ALS ICD-9 codes in H. Morin than the other the other pilot sites. This just is a comparison of number of charts reviewed by site and age, and the distribution is very similar for each of the things, even though H. Morin had a lot more charts reviewed, and they had a much bigger catchment area, so we would expect to see that that they had a lot more cases reviewed. The same thing with the number of charts reviewed by race. You can see that H. Morin had a huge number of unknowns just because of the catchment areas that were did not actually collect race, so we weren't able to get that. And the same thing you see for charts reviewed by sex and site. Males are, in almost every case, there's more males than females. Once we received the data back from the pilot sites, we looked at the national data and the chart reviewed, and that's how we developed an algorithm so that we could apply that back to the national databases for frequent for newer years and everything, so we could identify and say, all right, this criteria is what determines an ALS patient. First of all, we looked at the chart reviews and classified individuals as ALS, not ALS, or unknown ALS status based on the medical review. And a doctor was the one who did the medical reviews for each one of these. We identified characteristics of true cases to place in the algorithm model. And then we built the algorithm that maximizes sensitivity and specificity. Then once we did that, we combined the records from all the sites for those individuals where the medical records were reviewed and checked to see if the process was still working. This shows the sensitivity and specificity for the best model. This gives you an idea of some of the criteria that were in the algorithm. So ALS showed up in more than 1 year, because this was during a five-year period from 2001 to 2005. So ALS would show up in more than 1 year. The person had a death certificate or prescription for Relutech. Relutech is the only approved ALS medication right now by the FDA. An example for not having ALS, there was no ALS visit, and that's talking about like an ICD-9 code, and no prescription for Relyotec. Anybody under 18 years, we automatically said was not ALS because ALS is it's a different disorder if they're children. So you don't. It's very rare to see them even in the 18 to 20 year range, and most cases are in the 60s or above. For the best model, we had a specificity of 85.85 and sensitivity of 0.87. The methods for the National ALS Registry, this is once we did the pilot project, we determined that it was a feasible project. So what we would do, we did was apply the algorithm to the national databases to identify ALS patients. We started out with the 2001 to 2005 data. Now we're looking at 2006 to 2009 data, and then we'll yearly get a new year's worth of data each, like once a year. And so we'll apply the algorithms to the national databases to help fill the registry. Not all people are going to be in the VA or in Medicare and Medicaid, so we wanted to come up with an alternative method to gather persons with ALS. And so we developed a web portal for self-registration in the ALS registry. The self-registration is based on a secure CDC server, and it hosts the National ALS Registry for people to register on their own. So it allows self-enrollment after they are verified using 6 questions. These questions were developed by the VA, and they had a registry going on for a couple of years, and they had tested and developed these questions, and why reinvent the wheel? We wanted to use questions that we knew that were working. This is real-time information, up to date. Once a patient registers through the survey, through the web portal, they can take short surveys that look at risk factors such as genetic factors, basic demographics, environmental, and other exposures. There's also we don't want to just get information from the patients, but we want to be able to give them information back, so we have educational information about ALS on the web portal. And there's also links to other resources for ALS patients and family members. This is just a display of how the national databases work along with the web portal registration to create the National ALS Registry. With the national databases, the Medicare and Medicaid, we apply the algorithm first and then determine if they're not ALS patients, potential ALS patients, or true ALS patients. If they're not ALS patients or potential ALS patients, they don't go into the registry, but we will follow up with them in the next year's worth of data or the following year, because maybe with 2 years' worth of data, they might become eligible to be, or they might become a true ALS patient based on the algorithm. With the web portal, they go through the validation questions and then are determined to be true ALS patients or not ALS patients. If they aren't ALS patients, we let them know, thank you, but if you want to contact us for further information, you can, but at this time you can't be registered. Then what we do is match up the two sets of cases to make sure we're not duplicating, so we don't want one person to be counted twice, so we do match them up. We haven't been able to do that because we have just 1 year's worth of data, not quite a year's worth of data from the web portal registration. But once we get that and get the years matched up, then we'll make sure that we're not duplicating cases. And then the true ALS patients in the web portal can take the risk factor modules. If you have any more questions, I'll be happy to answer questions if we still have time. But we also have our National ALS Registry booth at 1024. And so you can ask additional questions about the pilot projects or the current National ALS Registry and what our future plans are.
Okay. Thank you, Dr. Sanchez. Certainly appreciate the talk. Are there any questions at this point from the audience? Okay. Dr. Sanchez, I have a quick question for you, if that's okay. So I'm wondering, the criteria that you had presented for discriminating the ALS cases from the non-ALS cases, were those selected based upon medical expertise, or was there a statistical mechanism that you had used? If you could talk about that methodology.
Yeah, what we did was we took all the chart reviews that were, and these were medical reviews that the doctors had determined that they were ALS, not ALS, and they were matched up with the national database, so like Medicare. So we would see what like what the information was in the Medicare, and then what we did was did more of a statistical determination for that. So that we looked at, we would look at different things like ICD-9 codes, how many years did they show up in the database with an ALS ICD-9 code? Did they have a prescription for Reliotech? I mean, we tried a lot of different combinations, but it was a statistical process versus medical, at least on our part. The original medical reviews, though, those were done by physicians. So.
Okay, thank you.
This site... is for patients to register, but it's also for researchers and family members and anybody to get more additional information on the ALS registry. So it's the beginning to the web portal, but patients would like actually click join here. But other we have publications up there. We have we actually have a CME module for physicians to. And care, other nurses, caregivers, to get more information on the ALS registry and ALS in general. So there's a lot of information at this website. I don't think we have the algorithm up there, but that might be something we might want to look into putting up there so people can see what the criteria is. We worked really hard to get the sensitivity up as much as we could, but since we were only dealing with just medical records from Medicare, Medicaid, and the VA, that's all the information we had. We didn't have like clinical signs or anything like that that would have probably helped the sensitivity and specificity go up. So we were really limited to how many years were they showing up in the database, what ICD-9 codes were they showing up with, what prescriptions they had. But we had limited information to go by. So we were actually, the sensitivity and specificity aren't the best, but I mean they're really good for the information that we had. So, yes.
I'm wondering if you could comment on the parallels between the ALS registry and cancer registries. I'm wondering about do you plan on using the registry information for surveillance, tracking incidence and prevalence? Do you plan on using the registry for medical care evaluation?
What we're hoping to use the registry for is to get better estimates of the prevalence in the United States. Because of the patient's short time of living between 2 to 5 years and the lag time that we have on getting all of the information, there's not going to be a way to get the incidence rates from our registry. But the incidence rates are very close to the annual death rates just because of the short period of time. At least the way we built this registry. But we did look at the cancer registry as a model and to look at the best ways to go about doing this. So that was, we definitely did look at that to see what the best way to go about creating this registry.
Okay, thank you again, Dr. Sanchez. Appreciate the talk.